Good morning, everyone. It is Thursday, October 19th, 2017, and a big week is underway for the Green Bay Packers. Of course, for those of you that watched the game last weekend, you know that quarterback Aaron Rodgers left with a broken collarbone, and whether or not he plays another snap this season for the Packers is up in the air and undetermined. So, the era of Brett Hundley, at least temporarily, is upon the city of Green Bay. And so here to discuss all of that with me is Tom Silverstein, fellow beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And Tom, life goes on. Life does go on.
Yes, we all have to survive. And actually that song was more for me because I'm kind of under the weather a little bit today. So I'm trying to survive the week. And the Packers have a lot of surviving to try to do this week too.
Did you need to talk anybody off the ledge in the live blog?
I think more than a few people jumped.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah, just said they were done with the season. But I don't believe them because come Sunday, curiosity, you know, it's like rubbernecking, you know. You want to kind of see what the result of all this is going to be. And, you know, I think my suggestion to everybody, and this would be regardless of who's playing or whatever, is give it time to see what happens, to see how it plays out. I don't know. I was more sure that this wouldn't work with Hundley after the game, but I'm changing my opinion a little bit. I'm not saying they're going to the Super Bowl, but I kept looking at the NFC, and I look at the NFC North, and I look at the Packers roster, and I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they could finish above 500. And who knows? I don't know. I just want to see it play out. I don't think I need to make declarations right now. That's
no,
how
I agree.
Feel.
And I think even if they finished at 8-8, that could still win the NFC North.
Correct.
I mean,
yeah.
The NFC North does not seem to be. There doesn't seem to be anybody running away with it by any means, and now Stafford, I think, is banged up a little bit, so you have that to throw into the mix, and who knows who's going to play quarterback for Minnesota for the next couple of months now that Bridgewater's back at practice. But let's talk about Hundley. So, you know, we saw sort of what the offense looked like in Minnesota, which was behind a patchwork offensive line, to say the least. He was knocked around like crazy. He was sacked a few times. He threw three picks. He made some questionable decisions. He had no time in the pocket. There was no real running game to speak of. So now that they have a week to sort of figure out what works best for Hundley, to figure out how to build a game plan around him versus what Rodgers does, what do you think can work for this group?
Well, first they have to pare down the offense. He doesn't need all the responsibilities that Rodgers had for run-pass options. I mean, you want to keep that in the offense, but pare it down. And I think a couple of things. One, I think you'll see him roll out. You almost never see Rodgers roll out, you know, where the offensive line rolls out with him. I think you'll probably see a lot of play action, a lot of bootleg stuff where he can get out in the open and run. I don't know if they'll do read option, but I think that's a possibility. You know, they're not going to want him to run very often, but, you know, it's also one of those things where he could fake the handoff and still pass, you know. So I think a lot of movement is what you're going to see. The whole key to this is what their offensive line is going to look like. If they're starting Justin McCray at left tackle and Lucas Patrick at left guard and Ulrich John at John Ulrich, whatever his name is, at right tackle, they're in deep doo-doo. They might as well just take a knee every series. So that's going to be the key.
What I'm sort of looking to see with Hundley is, you know, when we talked about him during the exhibition season on this podcast, you mentioned that he really did not look great outside the pocket. And there were so many times where he would roll and roll and roll, and he'd get to the sideline and just throw it away. Even in practice,
mm-hmm.
we saw that.
Mm-hmm. We did.
And so, conversely, I think that despite the fact that that is a weakness for him, or at least it was a couple months ago, that it does make the most sense, like you said, for one simple reason. It takes away what he has to read on the field. Mm-hmm. You know, if he's rolling to the right side, they're not going to have him throwing all the way to the left.
Yes, it does.
And so it simplifies
the things. The downside of it is it takes a third of the field out of the equation. And that's why they don't do it with Aaron Rodgers, because they don't want to take away
a third of the field. But with a young guy, it could be an upside.
It could be. And typically when you do that, you've only got a couple routes going out. And oftentimes it's a deep ball. So we'll see about that. But, yeah, I don't think it's a terrible thing to roll out with him. And just he just can't take chances and throw it, you know, think he can throw it all the way to the other side.
There was the weekly analysis column by our colleagues, Pete Doherty and Eric Baranchek, and they sort of pointed out how when Rodgers took over as starter that there were a lot of limited reads, and there wasn't a lot that they required him to do in terms of maybe only reading half the field at a time. Do you remember it being very limited for Rodgers when he first started as well?
You know, it's been a process. I don't think McCarthy's offense was that sophisticated back then.
That's a good point.
It's really when they went to no huddle that they really started doing more of the read pass option, giving Rodgers more freedom to make calls at the line. I think it's just been a natural process. And yes, I'm sure they were much simpler back then. But and Rodgers was a smart guy and could handle everything. So I do think it'll be a very limited, not limited, that's the wrong word. It'll be pared down. And don't be surprised if they try to run it quite a bit, just to take some pressure off of him.
One of the questions that I asked McCarthy at his press conference on Wednesday morning was how much his role changes, him being McCarthy, during these two-minute drive situations and things like that, because, you know, Rodgers can basically run that by himself for the most part and calls all the plays. And a lot of times the Packers, you know, you can't necessarily count on points from those, but you can feel pretty confident that Rodgers is at least going to move the ball or get him in position for Crosby to kick. And I almost wonder now if they have to sort of, if like within the last 4 minutes of a half or you know, the last 4 minutes of the game, they can't assume that they're going to score anymore.
No. You know, that doubling up and calling timeouts, I'm not sure you're going to want to do that anymore. I think depending on what the score is, you're going to play a more conservative game. I think you're going to punt
a lot.
A lot. And punt more. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see if it affects Dom Capers at all. Does he get more, you know, gambling? Does he gamble more and try to get big plays, or does he play it safe? That'll be kind of interesting to see.
So, if they have somewhat of a decent cast of offensive linemen, so maybe they get one of the tackles back, or maybe they get two out of the three guys in total that are, you know, that dropped out of the game, so maybe they get two out of Bakhtiari, Bulaga, and Lane Taylor, can they run the ball against New Orleans, and do you think that they try and go heavy on the run?
They can run the ball, but they have to keep trying. And the reason you have to keep trying is because if they've got 8-9 guys in the box, it's going to be hard to run it. But as Jari Evans, who played for the Saints last year, was explaining in the locker room today, they switch their fronts around a lot. They're shifting. They're doing all kinds of different things. But if you break one of them, if one of those guys misses his gap, you know, or plays out of the gap, and you bust a long run on them, you change everything. And that's why you have to keep trying. Even though you might only get a yard or two, you got to keep pounding it in there and find out whether you can find a soft spot. And once you do, then that opens up a lot of things for you.
So Hundley threw 33 passes against the Vikings in essentially 3.5 quarters of action, maybe a little bit less than that. Am I crazy to think that in a perfect world they would prefer to have him throw it less than 30 times because that means they're probably running the ball pretty well?
30 times is pretty standard.
Okay.
You know, you figure most average it's 60 plays. So 30 runs and 30 runs and 30 passes, that's 50-50. What did they wind up with runs?
It was 37-24, counting Rodgers as four passes.
Okay. But they were behind,
right,
too.
Exactly.
They weren't running in those last two drives. So if he throws 30 times, to me, that's an indication that they're running the ball.
Do you think that well, I guess one of the things that I was thinking back to was some of the comments that Martellus Bennett has made about just the difficulty of syncing up with Aaron Rodgers and trying to learn the different things that he likes, whether it's when plays break down or rolling out of the pocket, et cetera, all these different types of scenarios.
Apparently, Martellus Bennett has a lot of trouble with that, especially when the ball hits him in the hands.
Yeah, he's been a disappointment, but that's a topic for another day.
Sorry, didn't mean to.
I just wonder if so he's still struggling to adjust to Aaron Rodgers. For the first time all season, Richard Rodgers plays more snaps than Lance Kendricks against the Vikings. I just wonder if with two out of the three tight ends being brand new guys in Bennett and Kendricks, is that an area that there's really going to be some struggles with Hundley trying to connect? Because if Bennett can't connect with Rodgers, now he's got to deal with somebody brand new, and Kendricks has to deal with somebody
that's a good point.
And I don't know if Richard Rodgers becomes a little bit more valuable.
I think he does. I think that's a really good point. I think he's a nice safety valve. You know, he's the kind of guy who can sit down, you know, in a zone. If you're going into a more of a short passing game, that's the kind of guy you want because he's got really good hands. He's not going to break any tackles or get down the field. But, yeah, I think you could see a bigger role for him. He could be a nice safety valve for Hundley, who probably played with him quite a bit in training camp.
Yeah.
You know, and he played a lot with Trevor Davis. He played a lot with Janice. He played a lot with Geronimo Allison.
Max isn't here anymore.
Ouch.
But you know, I've even just when Rodgers is in there, I've wondered why Richard Rodgers hasn't played a little bit more.
Yeah.
To me, with Rodgers' hands and the ability by Aaron Rodgers to have these quick releases, I don't see why Richard Rodgers can't have four catches for 40 yards every game.
Well, they were completely all in on Martellus Bennett because even though he dropped six balls up to this point, I think they felt the payoff would come later in the year. And they wanted Rodgers and Bennett to eventually build that kind of chemistry. And so they were willing to do that early in the season. And plus, Bennett's a way better blocker than Richard Rodgers.
Yeah, without question.
So you're able to use him. You're also able to create some matchups that are favorable when you have him in the lineup. You know, when you have Richard Rodgers in the lineup, you can throw a linebacker out there to cover him if you want. You know,
well, so he might be able to do that with Bennett too. I mean, the guy can't run.
Yeah, but he's still a big target, and you know he was really open on that play that
so
Rodgers
open.
Got hurt. Yeah, if he catches that ball, it's a 25-yard gain. Anyway, to get to your point, yes, I think we could see more Richard Rodgers.
So in today's paper, Thursday morning, you had a story about the running back situation and sort of the Aaron Jones versus Ty Montgomery sort of quandary. And
yes, it was an analysis.
Okay. And so what prompted you to choose that as a topic, and how do you think this sort of shakes out?
Well, I was just shocked that Montgomery started the game against the Vikings. Here's a guy who's got broken ribs. He hasn't played for missed two games.
Right.
And what are you doing starting him when you got a guy who just ran for 126 yards? You know, I don't get it. And I really think that Jones is the guy who's going to pair with Hundley really well because all of a sudden you get a lot of speed in your backfield. And you can do some things with Jones and Hundley to move them out. You know, you could do some read option stuff. Plus, I just think Aaron Jones is a better running back than Ty Montgomery. And I think if you need to break some long runs, he's the guy who's going to do it. He's going to – the holes are not going to be very big anymore. You know, they're just not, because it's going to be eight-man fronts, and you need someone who can hit it up in there really fast or can get around the corner. And I just think that you have to roll with Jones, and I'm not sure they're going to do that. I didn't get any sense from McCarthy on Wednesday that he was going to back off Montgomery.
The more that I see Montgomery play, the more that I think he's a guy that is clearly an unbelievable athlete, just overall, tremendous physical abilities, but he doesn't seem to fit in any one particular spot.
Yeah.
He can have a good game at receiver every now and then. He's going to have a good game at running back every mm-hmm. now and then. But in terms of what you can expect from him week after week after week, I just don't know where he fits best.
Yeah, I think he's a gadget guy, third down back.
Okay.
I think you can have him in the backfield and he can block. You can motion him out and try to get him matched up with a safety. You can do a draw play, screen. You know, I think he could be effective doing that. But carrying the ball time and time again, you know, I did this analysis, and I looked at, you know, first down is so important, and I looked at the averages per carry for Jones and Montgomery, and Montgomery was like 3.0 on first down, and Jones was over 4.0. That's a big difference, and you got to get 4 yards. That takes a lot of pressure off of Hundley. So I don't know what they're going to do, but if they're smart, I think they go with Jones.
I was reading a story by our old colleague Bob McGinn looking back at the Vikings game.
Who?
And he Bob
Who?
McGinn of BobMcGinnFootball.com.
That's interesting. I'll have to look at that sometime.
He pointed out that Hundley had some real issues in the screen game against the Vikings.
Yes, he did.
And if that's not the case, if he can get going with the screen game, I think that's an area where Jones can be really effective because he sets up his blocks so well.
I mentioned in that story that those two screens could have changed the game.
Exactly.
They really could have.
And so that, when I read what Bob wrote and then I went back and watched the game and I noticed the same thing, you know, it reminded me of a discussion I had with Lane Taylor during training camp where their first couple exhibition games, their screens were horrendous.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Don Barkley got hurt on one. I mean, it was just a mess. And so I asked him, I said, what's the deal with screens? Why does this happen? And he said, well, it's something you need to do in a game a few times and screw it up until you finally get the timing for it. And so I'm wondering if with Hundley, he was going from practice where he was running them okay to the mm-hmm. exhibition games where immediately the tempo changes and he mm-hmm. struggles. Then he gets that hang of that, but then he has to apply it in a real game and the tempo changes again and he's still not quite ready for it yet.
Yeah, and let's also look at those two plays. One of them, Ulrich John let his guy
True.
Run right past him. And that's the one block you need. Everybody is going out, you know, to lead in front of Aaron Jones. But the tackle has got to hold his guy up, and he doesn't. And Hundley gets hit right in the chest. The other one, he was under pressure. Lucas Patrick, I thought, maybe they're taught this way, but I thought he should have at least created a little bit of a resistance to the defensive tackle who wound up getting in Hundley's face. So they're just discombobulated a little bit. But all that said, if he gets it to Jones, it could be a big game because he's going to use his blocks and he's quick. He's going to get to it right away. And so I would have been very interested to see what happened on those. Yep.
All right. So anything else you want to talk about with the offense here? We got a few questions on Twitter to answer at some point, but I didn't know if there was anything else you wanted to bring up before we get there.
No, I mean, we got tomorrow's podcast as well.
So yeah, so we'll talk about the defense and stuff there too. Okay, so the question that you're going to get from everybody is, you know, what can Vince Beagle bring to this defense? Mm-hmm. There was a couple of those. So Beagle on Wednesday practiced with no restrictions for the first time. He said he felt great afterward. He doesn't know if he'll be ready to play this weekend. I doubt he plays this weekend. I don't think there's any chance. I think he could play against the Lions after the bye week. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's unreasonable. Mm-hmm. But what is his upside or what is his ceiling, you know, of what he can contribute to this team?
Well, first, he's got to stay healthy because every time he's gone on the field, he's gotten hurt. So that's number one. Number two, you know, he sort of reminds me, he's like a Blake Martinez type. I think that's where they can find some, not the same position, but I'm talking about the same type of player. A guy who, once he gets it, he'll play faster than he plays normally. And I don't think he's a big sack guy. I don't think he's going to come in and get a ton of sacks. But I do think he's kind of like a better Kyler Fackrell, you know, someone who can be versatile, someone will hustle to the ball, sort of like Blake Martinez, you know, learn when you can take your shots.
Which means it could take a little while, too.
Yes, it's going to take a while. He's not going to come in there and have three sacks and two quarterback hits and an interception in his first game.
He's going to play a lot of special teams. I mean, that's where they're going to use him.
That's true.
And, you know, they're going to play him there with a few snaps here and there from scrimmage. But the bottom line is they're going to ride Matthews, Perry, and Brooks as much as they can this year.
If they can, yeah. I mean, and they throw Fackrell in there. And I don't know about Chris Odom. They didn't even play him, right?
One snap.
He was active. Yeah, so they got to be careful with that, with Matthews and Perry, about overusing them, because by the end of that season, they're going to, you don't want that many snaps for them because they're going to get hurt. As Perry is hurt now, he's got a knee injury.
Yep.
He was added. Now, he looked like he was moving okay in practice. I mean, he didn't really practice, but I don't know that it's anything serious, but it's up. Anytime you're on the injury report, it's not minor.
So Beagle practiced for the first time Wednesday, like I said, which means that from that day they have 3 weeks to make a choice about whether or not they want to activate him, put him on the 53-man roster. If they don't, they're obviously going to, but if they didn't, he would just go back to injured reserve and miss the rest of the season.
You know, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No,
the downside of this is if, and I wonder if they thought about the strategy, is that by using the bye week, he doesn't get a week of practice.
Right.
So of his 3 weeks, he's only...
But is it three game weeks or three calendar weeks?
No, I think it's three calendar weeks.
Okay.
I think so, because I think week 12 is the latest you can make a decision on a guy.
Well, maybe
we'll
double-check
that and get back tomorrow in tomorrow's podcast. But I believe that's the case.
And so while we're talking about him, let's just bring up Goodson real quick, too.
Yeah.
That was a guy we mentioned after the game on Sunday. So Goodson did not practice on Wednesday. He was off to the side working with Don Barclay and some of the medical staff doing some sprints and things. He's about 1 week shy of 11 months from the day that he tore his ACL. Mm-hmm. So essentially 10 months and 3 weeks. What do you think? Does he play this season?
Kind of depends on, well, now that they've lost Quentin Rollins, I think there is a chance he could play. And we didn't really talk about Quentin Rollins, but really a shame. It looks he tore his Achilles, and so he's done for the year. He was put on IR, and that's a bad injury. That's just a bad injury, especially for a cornerback. So you feel bad for the guy because, you know, you can rip him for having not developed, but at least he was a guy who accepted, unlike, you know, you put him next to Demarius Randall, and that's like night and day. He was a guy who took his job very seriously and wanted, you know, not that Randall doesn't, but he was just more grounded person.
Yeah, I saw somebody put it on Twitter in a way that I thought was pretty accurate. With Quentin Rollins, you get all of the effort and none of the speed. And with Demarius Randall, you get more speed but none of the effort.
Yeah, right. Yeah, that's a pretty good way to put it. So anyway, to get back to your question about Dmitri Goodson, I think they'll give him up to the week 12 and see what happens. You never know what will happen, but you got to keep corners around, as they showed the other day, man. And I'm kind of surprised he's not practicing, but it must be a medical decision.
Yeah, I would think so, too. This one is less about the Packers in general, but an interesting one that I don't really know the answer to. Maybe you do. Marshall McElhinney wants to know, at the time of the next CBA discussions, do you think teams will change the game day roster to reflect all 53 players? I've never understood the purpose of inactives.
So, possibly, but here's why they have an inactive list. So let's say you have a 53-man roster, and which you do, and six of your guys are hurt, cannot play, absolutely. Other team has 53 guys, and nobody's hurt. Everybody can play. It winds up being a disadvantage, a big disadvantage for the team that's hurt. And they don't want to punish you for being injured. So they figure the average is six or seven injured guys, you know, that's the most you're going to probably have in a given week. And so it sort of levels the playing field for teams that are really injured. That's the reason why they do that.
So, because in other words, you know, if a team had a bunch of guys that were hurt and the other one had none, you essentially just have more players at your disposal.
Absolutely.
And so a team that's fully healthy will, in theory, have to sit guys that are healthy just to sort of balance it out a little bit. Gotcha.
Yes. Okay. Well, but not only that, they could rotate 53 guys in against a team that's only got 46.
Right.
And that's a huge, you know, with special teams and all that kind of stuff, that's a huge advantage.
No question. Now there's one question that I can't answer, or at least take a stab at. This one is one that was discussed on Wednesday when we had a chance to speak with Saints coach Sean Payton on the conference call. The question is there any chance Ted Thompson gives up a late conditional pick to the Saints to bring Taysom Hill back into the fold at quarterback? Well, Payton was asked about Hill, and he said, first of all, that he's developing well, they like what they see from him, and I think that they probably view him as their backup guy going into next season, because I think their number two right now is Chase Daniel, who's 30 or 31 years old, and I believe becomes a free agent after this season. So then Hill could, in theory, step up and be the number two guy. Now he's number three on their 53-man roster. But Payton gave sort of a really interesting explanation of how he discovered Hill and why he decided to claim him, and that was he was watching tape on Max McCaffrey. He was watching Max McCaffrey. He wanted to find a way to get McCaffrey onto his practice squad. Right. And then he said, you know, the more I kept watching him, the more I kept seeing that he was making plays with this guy named, you know, Hill. And he goes, at first I thought it was Sean Hill, and I couldn't believe Sean Hill was still in the league. And he said, and then the guy scrambled for 8 yards, so I knew it wasn't Sean Hill anymore. And so he decides to bring in Jeff Ireland, their assistant GM, and they watch tape on Taysom Hill, and they say, well, what do you think? And they said they tried to come up with reasons why they shouldn't claim him, and they couldn't do it. So they said, all right, let's just trust it and go with it. And they claimed him, and they don't seem to be looking back since it's week seven now, and he's still on the 53?
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you think he can be a backup in this league?
Yeah, I do.
He's 27 years old now.
He's 27, and he has an injury history. That's a problem. But right now, would you take him over Joe Callahan?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I think, and I even wrote this in the little note that I put together in today's paper. I said that I still think that no matter what, Hundley starts the game this weekend. But I think it would have been fascinating if Taysom Hill has another 2 months in this offense, because he was, I mean, he could have pushed Hundley for that number two spot.
Yeah, had a really good arm. Had a lot to learn about pro-style offense, but so did Hundley.
Yeah.
Hundley didn't play in a pro-style offense. He had, first time he ever took a snap under center was at training camp here, or, you know, minicamp or whatever.
So, no, I don't think they make a trade for Taysom Hill, partly because I don't think New Orleans would give him up.
You know, Payton could be also blowing smoke up our butts because he wants to get a draft pick from Ted.
True.
You know, he could be.
Or he just wants to stick it to Ted because he knows Aaron's hurt.
Yeah, could be. But, you know, leave it up to Sean Payton. I wouldn't be surprised if he's talking him up, trying to get, you know, Russell up a draft pick.
Does Payton have personnel control down there?
Yes. Okay. I mean,
not like Belichick.
It's not written, but I think he is the one who has final say on everything.
Gotcha. Let's see. Any other good questions here? Is this the kind of stuff you saw on the blog, Tom? Am I alone as a fan that I'd rather GB lose as many games as possible to get them a high pick yes. rather than go 8-8 and flame out in the first round?
I saw that quite a bit. Yes, yes. That's, you know, hey, maybe then everything, then it's, someone said, someone at work said, well, at least we won't blow deadline on draft night. You know, because they'll be picking
nice
a lot sooner than they did last year. So, anyway.
And I think the last one we'll take for today is more of a practical one. This person wants to know, is Aaron Rodgers eligible for IR designated to return? Why don't you sort of explain where he's at and what the Packers are thinking there?
Yeah, so anybody is eligible. As long as you go on IR after the 53-man rosters are set, which is right after training camp. And so you put guys on IR and you have two options, sort of like two get out of jail free cards to bring two guys back. Now they have to sit for a minimum of 8 weeks and then you can bring them back. So the Packers, you know, for sure they're going to bring back Don Barkley. He's on injured reserve now. They got to have another lineman. They can't go on.
They'd take him over Spriggs.
I think so. Right now, he's probably farther ahead than Spriggs. And I don't doubt if they bring Spriggs back. I wouldn't be surprised if they brought him back. I think they're going to hold Rodgers. Now, if the surgery shows that there's absolutely no way he's coming back, they can put him on IR and not even have to worry about designated to
right.
return. If there's a chance he comes back, I think they could keep him on the roster and just chance it. Yeah, I mean, really. So it means that
essentially just means you're carrying three quarterbacks like they did.
Yeah, yeah, and actually you can keep one quarterback. They'll have to keep Callahan active.
Yeah.
And
Rodgers would be inactive every
week. It'd be inactive, right. So I could see them doing that. If they put him on IR, then I believe he's done for the year.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I feel like if they plan to use one of their designated to return spots on him, I feel like they would have put him on IR already to get credit for this week.
Right.
You don't want to waste another week if you think he could be back in 7 or 8, you know?
Yeah.
So I just think that, you know, the reason they would keep him on the 53 is because they're hoping that he can come back a little, maybe even a little sooner than
right,
that, in
right.
theory.
Yeah, or in the playoffs or whatever. Playoffs.
And they've got enough injuries where they could pick two other guys and bring them back. And
yeah, well, they need to bolster the offensive line.
Yeah,
and that's
why
they got to have Barkley back, and they probably need Spriggs back.
I feel like in another month, by Thanksgiving, if you asked me, are Adam Pankey and Ulrich John on the 53-man roster, I say no.
No.
Because they're Spriggs and Barkley.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
So we'll have to see how it all plays out, but we will have another podcast for you tomorrow morning breaking down all of the key matchups and probably some more discussion about Brett Hundley because, you know, why not?
Sure.
So we'll talk some more
Brett
then.
Brett Hundley all the time. And maybe we'll even talk about Brett Favre.
Well, we could. Did
sure.
you call him?
No. I expected him to call me,
well,
you know, to see what the situation was, but he didn't.
So. Okay. So I guess it's safe to say that Favre is not starting this week at quarterback.
No, I don't think so.
That's too bad. I would have enjoyed seeing
that. That would have been fun.
48-year-old Brett Favre coming in and slinging it around.
Heck yeah.
Man, coming off the street, I think you'd have to put the over-under at about 8 picks.
He's probably better than half the backups in the league right now.
Yeah?
You know,
would you take him over Callahan? 48-year-old Brett Favre over Joe Callahan?
Well, that's a good question. That's a good question.
I don't even know.
If my offensive line was healthy,
yeah.
I'd think about it.
What about Hogan in Cleveland? Favre's got to be better than him,
yeah,
right? Come on.
I mean, geez, God, there's some bad backups. Oh, and we didn't even talk about Kaepernick, you know,
yeah,
about that whole situation.
True.
Maybe we can talk about
We can talk about that a little bit tomorrow. So until then, be sure to check out all of our coverage on jsonline.com and packersnews.com, and we will talk to you guys soon.